Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Abarca with co-hosts, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webno.com. Today we will be joined by Hema, contributor, commentator, someone that we've had previously on other episodes to this podcast as channel, and someone who wears many, many hats, as also she on the side is a community organizer and has shared some of her work with us before. So welcome back, Hema.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back, especially surrounded by you lovely gentlemen in this topic. It's always good to add a female voice. You know, I'm not saying I don't.
The lies start so early.
All right. Well, let's talk about what today's episode will be. On today's episode, we'll be discussing something that Kenny had actually brought up. It's discussing the controversial Harper's letter on justice and open debate. The letter that was signed or that was published on the Harper's magazine on the 7th of July by 153 authors, intellectuals, and other cultural public figures, was an open letter published designed to call out cancel culture, or call out culture. And we will be giving each one of us our take, our views on it, so that we can then see whether this letter actually was, of any substance or importance. Why don't we start off with reading it, so we have our audience can have an idea of what the letter was about, since it was very short, as Andy is frowning.
I'm keeping that.
All right. A letter on justice and open debate. Our cultural institutions are facing a moment of trial. Powerful protests for racial and social justice are leading to overdue demands for police reform, along with wider calls for greater equality and inclusions across our society, not least in higher education, journalism, philanthropy, and the arts. But this needed reckoning has also intensified the new set of moral attitudes and political commitments that tend to weaken our norms of open debate and toleration of differences in favor of ideological conformity. As we applaud the first development, we also raise our voices against the second. The forces of illiberalism are gaining strength throughout the world and have a powerful ally in Donald Trump, who represents a real threat to democracy. But resistance must not be allowed to harden into its own brand of dogma or coercion, which right-wing demagogues are already exploiting. The democratic inclusion we want can be achieved only if we speak out against the intolerant climate that has set on all sides. The free exchange of information and ideas, the lifeblood of a liberal society, is daily becoming more constricted. While we have come to expect this on the radical right, censoriousness is also spreading more widely in our culture. An intolerance of opposing views, a vote for public shaming and ostracism, and the tendency to dissolve complex policy issues in a blinding moral certainty. We uphold the value of robust and even caustic counter speech from all quarters. But this is now all too common to hear calls for swift and severe retribution in response to perceived transgressions of speech and thought. More troubling still, institutional leaders, in a spirit of panic damage control, are delivering hasty and disproportionate punishments instead of considered reforms. Editors are fired for running controversial pieces. Books are withdrawn for alleged inauthenticity. Journalists are barred from writing on certain topics. Professors are investigated for quoting works of literature in class. A researcher is fired for circulating a peer-reviewed academic study. And the heads of organizations are ousted for what are sometimes just clumsy mistakes. Whatever the arguments around each particular incident, the result has been to steadily narrow the boundaries of what can be said without the threat of reprisal. We are already paying the price in greater risk aversion among writers, artists, and journalists who fear for their livelihoods if they depart from the consensus or even lack sufficient seal in agreement. This stifling atmosphere will ultimately harm the most vital cause of our time. The restriction of debate, whether by a repressive government or an intolerant society, invariably hurts those who lack power and makes everyone less capable of democratic participation. The way to defeat bad ideas is by exposure. argument and persuasion, not by trying to silence or wish them away. We refuse any false choice between justice and freedom, which cannot exist without each other. As writers, we need a culture that leaves us room for experimentation, risk-taking, and even mistakes. We need to preserve the possibility of good faith disagreement without dire professional consequences. If we won't defend the very thing on which our work depends, we shouldn't expect the public or the state to defend it for us.
Yeah, I mean, so I have many problems with this letter, you know, that it assumes that all the wrongs are brought upon, that the wrongs that are happening, that are on the surface right now, have been brought up by someone like Donald Trump. I think it comes up short as to the, at least the analysis, and it falls in line with like liberal, you know, this is all the Republicans type of thing almost. Although it does highlight that, you know, there is a problem within the left. And that part I do agree that, you know, I think we've said it in previous shows that the left has like a fundamentalist mindset where disagreement is seen as an act of betrayal, you know, to the, and so then we end up with this frame of understanding that is pretty limited in even analyzing the actual things that are happening. And then we end up, you know, delving into conversations of oppression politics. And you know, and ultimately, that doesn't have any winners other than the capitalist class, because, you know, we are focused on semantics and things, and rather than, you know, the obvious enemy that we all have. But that's just my initial thoughts.
Personally, I do agree with a lot of the items that come up in the list. I think that when you're a writer, when you're a journalist, when you're a researcher, your job is to really think outside of the box, is to report something, a different view, because we can't all see the same thing, regardless if it's because you can argue that Donald Trump has made an environment to it. And there's more to speak on that later on in the episode. I think we'll tackle it. I do. You know, a lot of, and I don't know if you guys read Bari Weiss, her resignation from the New York Times. She wrote an opinionist, and she was considered a centrist. She was brought after Donald Trump won, because the reality is that all of us were listening to the same, he's not going to win, he's not going to win, he's not going to win. And everyone was surprised when he won that they brought her on board. But a lot of people that tend to speak against liberals or tend to speak against the mainstream idea get ostracized, get pushed aside. As in a journalist, and, you know, someone that does research, and your job is to put that information out there, we're not allowing to do that. We're essentially creating an environment where we ourselves are censoring our own literature. We're censoring the own information we're getting. And not because someone is telling us to do, we're doing it to ourselves. So in that said, I do agree with a lot of the stuff that they mentioned.
I guess from my framework, and I think it's good that you mentioned Bari Weiss, she, the editor who's the New York Times, she's an editor on New York Times who's stepping down, and I read that as well. And it does, so initially I wanted to talk about this because because I heard about it around people who were saying, hey, this whole thing is controversial, it's raising issues of cancel culture. I think I saw it on The Rising with Crystal Ball and I can't remember the other guy's name, but it's kind of people who are both right and left. And one of the people who signed on the letter, in some ways, almost kind of, I think, is Matthew Iglesias, was then under fire at Vice, I think, you know, for signing on to it when a person, a coworker who identified as transgender, said that the person said they didn't feel comfortable with him being there, and you know, and it was a situation where he was in some ways censured. So the cancel culture kind of came up around it, even though this thing doesn't mention cancel culture specifically. You can read it in there. And in some ways, I do agree that it's taking on cancel culture, but honestly now, looking at it, I think its primary thing is to basically say the right and the left within the Democratic Party have to be able to unite to take on Donald Trump. And we have to end this discussion. We have to end this idea that the right within the Democratic Party can be challenged. I actually think what it really is the Democratic Party and Democratic Party forces, because that's what unites everyone on this list. is they all support Biden ultimately, and they all are against Trump. And they know that cancel culture really got its raison d'etre when Trump was elected, and everyone said everyone else who thought with Trump was there, any supporter of Trump was a fascist, and therefore, if you sounded like anything like Trump, you know, if you were against gun control, if you were against the Russiagate, you could be siding on the side of fascism and the right, and you had to be found out. The issues of racism and oppression all became put on him versus our system. And then the Democrats, who we had deporter-in-chief under Obama, all get a pass. And that's what's happened since. And they've found their fortunes resuscitated. And I think the Democrats know that they're going to be in power in November. And I know that they know there's going to be a rightward shift. And so the space is being reopened up again so that the right can emerge within the Democratic Party and not be challenged by the left. That's what this is about. And Barry Weiss is a perfect example. She was put onto New York Times there just because, oh, we have to have somebody who can reach out to the deplorables. We have to have somebody. But now that they know that group is done, you are done now. Trump is gone. Biden, it's going to be Biden in November. Now, Barry, there's no space for you. She thought Twitter was coming after her. Twitter's not coming after her. It's the establishment, and the establishment that doesn't want to ultimately give her a voice under these terms. Well, now they're trying to say, when the Democrats come to power, we have to find a way to give the right wing a voice within it, because that's really which way the Democrats are going to go once they go in power. All this left stuff is covered. So to me, yes, cancel culture can come up in it. You can see it like a Rorschach test if you want to, and some people will. But what this looks prominently to me is like a love letter to the Democratic Party to say, once we get in there, the way we're going to rule is the way you have to accept we rule, and we're not going to let the left wing tell us what we're going to do. We're going to be open to the right wing, the autocratic way that the Democrats plan on ruling once they get in power, just like Obama did. And we have to be open to that, and we have to have the left be able to give cover to that under the guise of open and liberal debate. So that's my feeling now about what predominantly is driving this. And I'll leave it at that.
I think, to be fair, I think it's important that those that oppose this letter should have their side viewed as well. And I invite people to look at another letter that was signed in response called A More Specific Letter on Justice and Open Debate, and where they mention that the problem with this letter is that it doesn't deal with the problem of power and those that have it and those that do not. And I myself find there are issues with this letter as well, like you all. I guess I'll start off with cancel culture, which is to ostracize, isolate, to tag and to shame people in our society that do not go with the orthodoxy of a certain ideology. And when I have spoken about this before with you specifically, Andy, over the phone about some of the things and topics we would discuss on this channel/podcast, one of the things I had told you was my fear of being canceled out because of evolving thoughts or beliefs, something that I have felt before and know quite well, I think more than most people, having been a former Jehovah's Witness. And I know quite well the orthodoxy of the religious sect, the political correctness that was rooted in medieval times, actually, and belonged to the right, first of all, and now was the playbook strategy, political strategy of the right, which now has been adopted by the left. And it is what I find to be the most unprogressive, if that's a word, strategy on our part of our side of the left, if we are to try to achieve any so-called progressivism. How do you say progressiveness? ¿Cómo se dice? Progressiveness. No?
Yeah, I guess so.
In doing this episode, I'm getting a little present and also a little nervous when I'm going to share this with friends, just as we did an episode previously on identity politics, that I know many people, friends of mine, particular friends and acquaintances that come to mind already, I can just see them before me, that view this issue, this culture war, this left versus right issue, as if I am betraying them or betraying, including myself, for my positions and my views that I have long held and my values that I have stood for over the years. And I find that I will disappoint them in doing this because they follow and abide by this form of public shaming that is so prevalent now on the liberal left, progressive left, and especially here in the Bay Area, where, you know, even maintaining my friendship with Jake or my association with you, Andy, you know, teacher friends have attacked me for even having some close relationship to you. It's what I find so much so many similarities in my former religious sect background as a former Jehovah's Witness, the hostility, the intolerance, the certainty and the sureness of this educated class self that must find and pick out the ones who aren't following and abiding by the standards of their norm and how they should perform. And those people, if you're not for us, you're against us sort of view, in the sense that you don't have anything to say about this because you are this, or you don't belong in our side because you are, I mean, anyone can fill in the blanks, you are part of the problem of the oppressionist class onto us. And this orthodoxy of maintaining order is, as I said, is the playbook strategy of the right formerly. And I just don't see, having been a former Jehovah's Witness, how public shaming, shunning, and again, isolating people is going to further our causes on the left. And so I'm not going to criticize on this episode things about the right, because there's plenty I can criticize them for. I'm going to criticize the left because that's what we're doing here on What's Left. It's to look at ourselves and see what we're doing that isn't working, that isn't furthering our cause. And I do think that we're so embedded in it that we don't realize how many people we are losing because this political correctness, this way of thought, this cancel culture is recruiting people for very extreme conservative views that we supposedly want to eradicate. And that is what we are a part of. We are in this game of allowing that to happen. Those of us that are supposedly, well, I'm not necessarily a social justice warrior, no, but I formerly was one, and I understand that sentiment. I know where people come from on that liberal left. I'm not necessarily someone that can consider myself to be a radical socialist, as both of you, Kenny and Andy, but I certainly understand why people do what they do. It's because of this liberalism. It's people going after others because you don't do or say. It's Orwellian. It's a way to control thought and speech, and this way of being is what makes people go to the right. It's what they do. And so I fear that we are just further pushing people away and dividing our cause. And that's how I see this. It's mostly from the lens of having been in a formerly in a sect. And so I guess I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to follow up on that. I think that in some ways we all have been in a sect, some more than others. You know, like I've had to shed my liberal ideology myself, and I have found myself outside and people not wanting to talk about certain topics because they understand that I will disagree with them. I find, just like you, Eduardo, liberal ideology very corrosive and counterproductive to our ends, you know, because again, we end up fighting each other in the playing oppression politics, pointing fingers, and, you know, and then I agree that this has a, we cannot talk about Trump without Obama. You know, we cannot talk about this rise of the right wing across the world without the failure of the liberal faces that were preaching inclusion, were preaching progress, and now it's failing. We have Brexit, you know, as a response to, you know, we have fucking Trump here. We have in Brazil, Bolsonaro. We have, you know, Macri in Argentina. We have in Poland, Duterte in the Philippines. You know, the capitalism with the liberal face has failed, and people are reacting to that. And we're not looking at that. So we fall into arguments of shaming, you know, Republicans for wanting to reopen their state, you know, because they are suffocated economically. And yet here in California, in San Francisco, we have people partying, like, you know, like supposedly in a pandemic, partying while criticizing, you know, the people that are desperate. You know, and then we end up accusing, you know, like working class white people of ignorant, and they don't know better because we do. And so, ironically, identity politics, because I think this stems from that, is not inclusive. It's actually kind of exclusionary and elitist, you know, because they want to teach, they want to preach to the uneducated. They want to preach to my mother, to the person that knows, you know, that they're getting a shitty deal. And then so, me, for example, then I'm struggling and I'm a man, but I'm supposed to be silent, you know, about my oppression. And so we're competing because no one, we shouldn't complain. We should only allow the voices of the most oppressed. And listen, I think we're all on the same side. I think we know their shit is fucked. But so long as we don't address the economic root of this issue, which is capitalism, we cannot begin to solve the other issues. And so we end up, you know, just playing pity parties and not actually progressing. We're reverting. And I agree. The left is inviting the real right wing, the real fascism that's going to take over this world, not just in the U.S. Because nationalism is rising as a response to the liberal faces that have ravaged and pillaged our world.
Well, I do agree with some of the things that you mentioned. Specifically the isolation of people that have been oppressed, like the right wing, the people that we tend to say, oh, you're just a Trump supporter, and we automatically cut your voice and your opinion out. You have no space here. Whatever you say is not worthy to be listened to and even less act upon. With this particular article and what they're referring to and what I considered as cancel culture, just kind of bringing it back, I don't think that it's the giving the voice to the oppressor, not giving the space for you. On the contrary, I think the spaces that are provided to are the elite, the people that are educated, that throw away fancy words, that have come up with this new way of seeing things and throwing these trigger words that your average population, quote unquote, you're oppressed, are not going to understand and therefore going to stay silent because they don't know how to respond to that. And then what ends up happening is their opinions are completely eliminated. There is no space here for you. So it's not a matter of you not having a voice. On the contrary, I think that someone like you that is outspoken, lips and someone like you that's outspoken, that walks in these circles, that talks about these things, you will have a voice. You will get to say something. Now, whether or not they ostracize you, that's something different, but your voice will be heard. Whereas the person that, let's you know, I'm not going to name this person. I'm not going to out them out. But I know of someone that grew up in the Central Valley, came up from a family that farmed. That's all they did. And during the water droughts that impacted California that heavily hit the Central Valley, and they were trying to say, no consumption of water, we're cutting it out, their livelihood was completely reduced because that's what they survived off of. And of course, he is now going towards the right. He has a lot of Republican mentality, and he supports Trump to an extent. He cannot speak. He cannot give his story. He cannot say, this is why I support him. Because even if he comes in with, I'm a Republican, you're done. Get out of here. There's no space for you here. So my problem with this whole cancel culture is, as human beings, we're all flawed. And even though right now it might be the popular thing, it might be the fashionable thing to consider yourself, I'm a liberal, I'm progressive, understand what that really means and understand that if you really are progressive, you're not allowing your ideals and your thoughts and what you believe in to actually evolve because you're sticking to this one model, you're sticking to this one story, and there's no space for anything outside of that. There's no argument that will make you budge. And even though it's a really crazy way of kind of comparing it to, I think of back in the days when we used to think the world was the center of the universe. There is nothing that can change people from that. And if you spoke against that, you were a witch, you were burnt, you were dumb, you didn't know what you were talking about. I mean, it's very extreme, but I see a lot of similarities to that. There is no space for argument. There is no space for discussion. There's only space for agreeing, for continuing to support the same ideals. So as a society, we're not doing anything. I actually think the right in that sense is doing more than the left is. But that's me.
Yeah. I mean, the things that you say, Gemma and Eduardo, as it relates to how we understand counterculture as this shaming thing. I mean, there's more that you both said, but that center part of it is, How dare you have these views? How dare you associate with somebody who might have those views? I am against that, and that's partly why What's Left came about. The thing I would say is that I still don't believe that's what this letter is about, protecting or fighting. This letter is about protecting these editors, these writers, these elites, these people. I mean, and they spell it out. And in fact, there's a person for Counterpunch who wrote a critique of this, and then one of the authors wrote a critique of this and mentioned counterculture, and then one of the signatories actually called that person and said, this isn't about counterculture, this is about protecting us. Like, that's how that person, that's not how everyone saw it, but if they wanted to take on counterculture, they would take on internet censorship, they would take on Facebook, they would take on what's happened since Russiagate with the whole expansion of the security state, basically controlling what voices can get out. Because you're right, Gemma. Currently, look, we have a YouTube channel. We can do this. But if we get to 5,000 views, 10,000 views, 100,000 views, you know what's going to happen. It's over. And Eduardo, you have been worried in the past that, you know, if we ever got an audience, the things that we say right now could be used against me, could be used against Kenny, could be used against you. And it's that fear that is poisonous to our cause. And you know, if Emma's on our episodes, it could be used against her. Having that fear is poisonous to our cause. And I do think that counterculture has contributed greatly to that. But that's not what this letter is fighting. Like I said, this letter is fighting for a space for them, for these artists. And this letter is fighting for the Democratic Party future that they predict. And I saw one of the signatories to this was a guy named Francis Fukuyama. I don't know if you've heard of him before, but he signed on. Francis Fukuyama was a Reagan neoconservative who basically said when the wall came down that was the end of history because capitalism was ascendant. The Stalinist wall, the Soviet Union wall, basically saying socialism is done, communism is done, the future is capitalism, and it's a grand future. There is no alternative, basically, he was saying. And since that time, he's had a bit of a rethinking. He went from being a Reagan neoconservative to being a little bit disgusted by what Bush did to now he's kind of moved that into that Democratic Party position. And here's what he wrote recently, and I think it really spells out what this thing's about. He wrote this in relationship to COVID. And what he said was, the major dividing line in effective crisis response will not place autocracies on one side and democracies on the other. What he meant is, well, he said, when this pandemic subsides, I suspect that we will have to discard discard simple dichotomies. The major dividing line in effective crisis response will not place autocracies on one side and democracies on the other. The crucial determinant in performance will not be the type of regime, but the state's capacity and, above all, trust in government. So what is he saying? What he's essentially admitting is you are going to have an autocratic government, but you're going to have one that you trust, and that will be a much better one that will rule over you. And this is because this is what the Democratic Party promises us. And this is what these people are preparing us for, is essentially dictators we can trust. And that is the logic, really, of cancel culture, because it doesn't really take on a fight of, because it's rooted in identity politics, it doesn't see the fight as taking on the institutions. It sees the fight as representation within those institutions and keeping the institutions in power, because we're not changing this at all. We're just going to put some faces up there to make it look better. We're going to put lipstick on the pig. And secondly, it's not about actually tearing down these. It's about social democracy. It's about wealth spreading or maybe putting up some institutions, you know, like even Medicare for All, but don't take down the financial institutions. Don't change that. So it's about those two things. And it's basically saying we are going to confine the debate to that. And these people are basically saying we want to make sure that is ensured, that the debate stays within that. Because if you go outside of that debate, if you say working class revolution, if you say workers must be armed, if you say COVID is a tool being used by the ruling class, then you are out of the debate. Then you are out. And that is something that Noam Chomsky, Francis Fukuyama, J.K. Rowling, and Joe Biden all have in common. And that's why we and others could be waging a fight against cancel culture and against liberalism that is basically dictators you can trust, but they are definitely not. They want to be, they want to basically suck up to the dictators and say, please give us the right to continue to make money and have our job while we justify your actions to the masses.
That's the irony of the left, at least the mainstream left, that we think we are progressive and progressing or trying to fight for progressive values, when in reality we're inviting fascism with a better face. You know, like, for example, we talked about DACA a couple of episodes ago. Was it the last episode? I don't remember. But
it was.
You know, and so this thing about harm reduction, right? Like the lesser of the two evils. You know, the evidence is clear. Like fascism has taken root. You know, like they've gone after many immigrants. You know, under Obama, while smiling. You know, and so the left actually is building up the repressive apparatus of the government. You know, ironically, you know, the right wing is fighting that a little. You know, at least, you know, on rhetoric. But we are willingly submitting to this new world that they're creating. So back to this letter, you know, I don't trust these reformist voices, you know, because they don't go to the full extent of the implications that we have to get rid of capitalism. You know, they're saying they can make it humane or replace it with some benevolent dictator. And so where is the harm reduction in that?
Well, I agree with a lot of the stuff you're talking about, Lips, and I do. Trust me, I do. However, I do see in certain instances the value of calling out of that cancel culture. And this is where I'm going to throw something at you guys. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for cancel culture, George Floyd protests, we wouldn't be seeing them. Because it would have been swept under the rug. The police would have been allowed to do whatever it was. People wouldn't be out there constantly ousting and ousting and ousting and putting pressure on these cops to cancel those police officers. We wouldn't have seen Michael Vick been sent to jail for the dogs because it was people's pressure. It was not the cops. It was not the NFL. They didn't want to touch it. Same thing with Weinstein. We wouldn't have seen that. We wouldn't. So on the flip side, you can also see where that goes to the extreme, where now you have this, and I don't know if you guys follow what's happening on YouTube with other people like Shane Dawson, Jeffree Star, Jenna Marbles, the whole cancel culture and how that's impacting even those, you know, content creators.
Yeah.
And then you have, as a consequence of Weinstein, which, look, to me, the whole Me Too movement, Lipson, you and I have spoken about it. I have a big problem with the Me Too movement, a huge problem with it. But now you have Amber Heard, and she ruined Johnny Depp's career with no evidence. And here's 4 years later, 6 years later, after her initial canceling, everybody canceled Johnny Depp. Now we're seeing that the true aggressor was Amber Heard, but he lost contracts, he lost movie deals, he's losing money, his reputation is down the drain, and all because of that cancel culture where we jump on it. Somebody said it to me, it must be true, I'm going to bandwagon, because that's the fashionable thing to do. If you are not jumping on that bandwagon, canceling everybody out, canceling the folks that everyone else is canceling, then you're part of the problem. You're a racist. You're a sexist, you know? So there is a problem, but I do want to say that, to me, cancel culture has to have a space where you can come out. You can openly speak out and I don't necessarily believe in canceling. I believe more in calling you out. You fucked up. You have to remedy it. You have to make it right. And then allowing that person to make it right. Moving on from that. You know, I don't know if you guys have followed, what was that one CEO of that San Francisco tech company that in Napa, I think, or Monterey, no, in Carmel, he was remarking all these racist comments, and then a white server stepped in. And then they were putting pressure that he had to step down as CEO. Yeah. So he stepped down and he said he was going to seek counseling for his racism.
Yeah.
If you ask me, this is bullshit. He's just saying this because he eventually wants to be led back into the group.
Yeah.
But then again, there's Michael Vick's example. He went in, he learned his mistake, he paid his due, in not just in prison, but also to society, volunteering and speaking out against this. He was a product of his, you know, surroundings. And I could argue the same thing for the CEO. He's a product of his surrounding. He's only surrounded by white male that think this way and think that it's okay. And maybe if he gets exposed and he learns, then he can benefit. That we, as a society, we have to understand that you just can't call somebody out. You just can't cancel. You have to allow space for improvement. You have to allow for them to change. Otherwise, we're going to be fucked. We're all flawed. There's plenty of things that I can get called out for that I have said in the past because I was an ignorant, stupid teenager. Yeah. I like causing drama. I like causing, you know, issues. I like causing revolts, debates. Yeah. So that would mean that I would say extraordinary things to get your attention. So that's my thing with cancel culture. While I see what you guys are arguing, I don't think we can cancel culture, pardon the redundancy, you know. There has to be something, there has to be a space where we have the means and the tools to put pressure, to call things out. But we also have to learn when we made a mistake, when we're going too far, and when we need to allow for this person to essentially be let back into society. So, I don't know.
So, Ahema, the part that you and I agree on in the terms of the spirit of cancel culture, if it is that spirit, is that the fight against racism and sexism and oppression has to come from below. It has to come from the voices of people. We don't trust it when it comes from the voice of elites. I think that's what you're saying, and I agree with that. I think that speaks to who the people who are speaking this letter, really they're representing the elites. I believe that. But I think the part that you're trying to hold on to is that voice. And the problem is, and I think that fighting against racism and sexism can only come from below, but it really can only come from below as a result of class struggle and collective struggle. Because one of the reasons it's taken on this form of like, find the racist, even among those of us who are doing this, is the notion is that the way of fighting racism is taking down individuals or even changing individuals like lights that are tuned. Whether we take them down or not, just change them. And there's no future to fighting racism by changing individuals. None. The way racism will be fought, both in two ways. That is the way racism will be fought, not just by the institutions, but the racism that is already in the heart of all of us, and this is in many ways the heart, whether it's internalized racism or the actual racism of white people against blacks. The only way that really is going to change is in struggle, is struggle against the capitalists, where white workers are going to be faced with black workers being brought into scabs. And if you don't deal with racism within your movement, then you are screwed. Similar with women, similar with immigrants, similar. So the fight against racism is a can only be taken up as a class struggle against the capitalists. And the racism that needs to be fought within our own movement is because we that's the only way we will successfully make war with the capitalists. Is it, and to the extent that we don't take up the common cause across national boundaries, across gender boundaries, and across racial divisions, is the extent to which we will be played by the capitalists. So since there's no class struggle, I don't blame people for being like, well, this is all you can do. You can just fight it out individually. But I do think, unfortunately, it's increasingly becoming a stand-in for struggle. And many of the people who, like, many of the people who say, who actually are for fighting or say they're against racism and representation are the same people who are going to allow for distance learning coming in August. And distance learning is going to be a definite attack on blacks and immigrants. And the same people who are saying that you're for immigrant rights are saying, well, I want contact tracing. Who do you think is going to be a victim of contact tracing if you have to have a code and a social security number next to this thing? Who do you think is going down? The state is coming after immigrants with that thing, right? So there can be no fight against racism that doesn't, one, take on those institutions and take on the institutions in the form of class struggle, of strikes. And that's why there is no other way. And when you try to go another way, you go at it individually, as well-meaning as you might be. You go at it individually and you'll never get there. You will only fall backwards as you go individual after individual and change them in a nice way or change them and shame them in a mean way. It will all lead to nothing other than a continuation of racism and sexism as the institutions get over on us. So that's how I would that's my response.
No, listen, I completely agree with what you're saying. To change, yes, I agree. But to start the ball rolling, to start that conversation, it has to start somewhere. And as we are right now, like exactly you said, that class struggle isn't there. We're not identifying with each other. We're fighting each other for crumbs. We're not even realizing that we need to come together and fight the bigger powers, the bigger issues that be. Completely agree with that. But to get the ball rolling under the certain circumstances that we have, we do need to be able to have those conversations. And if it starts out, it starts out like that. And that was one of the things that I was speaking to you about in the past. And I don't know if I think it was with you, Lipson, that I said my problems with the George Floyd protests, the one that we were part of here in San Francisco, that to me, it felt too parade. It felt too much Disney. It felt like you weren't mad. You were just doing it because you wanted to do it, because you were there part of it. But to have real change, you need to be mad. You need to see what's going on. Be mad, act upon it, push and demand that things change. And ultimately, my opinion is, and this is a conversation that I have with my brother, who is a Republican, is ultimately we need to acknowledge that there has to be a change in culture. There has to be a change in education. There has to be a change in the way that we see things and do things. And you coming here and throwing money at people is not going to really fix the problem. But yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm taking this out of context now. It's just where I was coming from that cancel aspect where we should feel comfortable doing it. And to a certain extent, if enough people jump in and they're focusing their attention to the correct thing, then you can make change. The problem is when we deviate and we attack one person and don't see past that one person. We don't see past what that bigger issue is. So that's what I meant when I said George Floyd. It was you're attacking these police officers, but then it evolved into we're attacking the system now. We're attacking the racism. Like it evolved to that, but it took a start. It took for you to see a common, an enemy, a face to an enemy, because people cannot see capitalism as an enemy because it doesn't really have a face. It's not a singular person. At least that's the way that I interpret it.
I just find it that, you know, the dominant idea is that if we change culture, we can change power. And from my perspective, that's not how it works. You know, you have to fundamentally change the structure of power to allow culture to change. And You know, you have to fundamentally change the structure of power to allow culture to change. because I come from the belief that the rulers of our society dictate the dominant values. You know, and all these artists, all these fools, like, they're just communicators of those values, you know, the private jets, the private islands, all that bullshit. You know, or the entrepreneur in the self-made, all that BS meritocracy and capitalism. So I agree that I'm not saying don't fight for, like, your right to speak up, you know, as an oppressed person. I'm saying go beyond that. That's part of the struggle in fighting capitalism. But if we don't have capitalism as our main enemy, as our goal, as destroying capitalism as our North Star, we will constantly just be pushing the roof back. You know, and so our goal is to dismantle this system in order to allow a new society to be created. You know, and so we will keep shaming people into behaving a certain way, but it doesn't achieve shit. We've had black faces and brown faces in high places. I'm just taking a Cornel West phrase and kind of just changing it a little bit, but that hasn't worked. You know, I was listening to Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, talking about this. You know, black majors were elected in like many cities in the 80s, 90s, and fundamentally it hasn't changed the condition of black people in this country. You know, under Obama, a lot of black people and brown people lost a lot of wealth. You know, this system is fundamentally racist. So if you're not changing the system, we cannot talk about addressing racism. It will come back in different ways and morph. It will bite us in the ass always. So I disagree with this notion that we change culture. Yes, we fight, you know, the racism. We fight sexism, homophobia in the struggle to eliminate capitalism. Or we are just running, you know, looking for fool's gold. So for me, it's like this and that, not this or that, or this before that. It's we fight racism and all these things in the struggle, like Lipson says. And we're not doing that. We're like you said, Hema, we are just fighting each other and fighting for crimes, really. And that all that's doing is, again, radicalizing the right wing, leaving fertile ground for people who have no political space, no voice. You know, like because if you tell a struggling white person about their privilege, tell anyone who's struggling about privilege. You know, we talked about reparations in this nation. What do you think Latinos would do? So you're going to have Latinos pay reparations for black people? So because we want to throw money at an issue. We don't want to change the structure. So if we want to really address the fundamental issues of racism, we have to understand that this system is fundamentally racist and have to be destroyed.
I guess I want to be very, very clear. And I don't say this because any one of you who did not say this, I'm saying this especially for the people I have in mind, like I had said, that will listen to this, that do espouse to that way of that strategic political move of canceling people out. So I'm speaking this part to them, that I, of course, abhor racism. I'm Latino. I have experienced racism. I have experienced oppression. And I even shared on one of our episodes of what people have said to me when I was in a southern state. So I, of course, I abhor racism. I abhor sexism and homophobia and any sort of discrimination. And I do believe that majority of people as well abhor it as well, including even if it's hard to think of it, but just as one of our episodes on Florida, where I went to go speak with people, the people there that are mostly on the right that I spoke to as well have the way that they communicate. If you read between what they are saying and you find the connectedness with them, they as well be against racism and discrimination. These divisions are held up by mostly the people who are in power, and maybe you are putting the people, Andy and Kenny, the people on this letter, as people upholding that system. I cannot pretend to know what their intentions are. I do admire, and I wouldn't call him stupid or anything like that. I do admire a lot of Margaret Atwood is on that. Noam Chomsky's on there. Pinker. There's a lot of people there that I truly do admire, love, and cherish. And so I won't go after them necessarily. But so I'm not going to necessarily say myself that I am going to go after them or to pretend to know their intentions. But I do think that they are calling out something that we can agree with, even if we have maybe different ways we come about it, which is that the shunning of people away is further dividing us. And the way that we are doing, as they're saying, the way that we are performing on the left is not giving access to those that can potentially come over to our side. I think of the former ex, what was her name, or the church, the Westboro Baptist Church, crazy, I don't want to say crazy, but you know that La Cartulina, like they would say, fags are, God hates fags, mm-hmm. sort of posters. And she changed because of what? One of the people that wasn't a member of that was a daughter of the of this cult that goes to funerals and goes and protests at different sites, such as the killings of trans folk. What do they do? They go and protest. But one of the members, former members, she got out because of conversations, because someone was able to listen to her. Someone was also willing to have conversations with her. Someone was there to not isolate her further and to create that division. There was also someone else, I forget his name, but someone who was part of a campaign to, he was a former Nazi, and I heard him on KPFA, and he said that, I forget his name, I'll find him, but he said that it's not to further push white people away, because that's what makes them want to unite. It's trying to get them to come onto our side. And by calling them out as privileged and saying that they don't have any oppression, that isn't, I understand why people say those things and the identity politics sphere. The thing is, we are further pushing people out who may be having evolving ideas, who don't know much about fragility, white fragility, and don't know how systematic racism works. And yes, they may have been in a bubble where maybe small town was mostly composed of white people and they don't know much beyond that. The ignorance, I don't think, is a way to... And that's the problem with... I understand the educated class, us, it's us. And I won't say it's you three, but I'll say for us, and I'll admit that I am guilty of this, the left is arrogant. The left is patronizing, and it's what makes people distance themselves from us. It's us that are trying to educate, and you know, it's people that, those of us that love academia, you know, it's the real mistake of the educated selves is that we underestimate those that aren't quote unquote aware or conservatives or the right-wingers, or Trump supporters, or God-lovers, or the ones that we deem to be stupid, or as Hillary Clinton said, the ones that are, como había dicho, the
deplorable.
Deplorables, thank you. And believe me, if only they were stupid, I mean, but they're really smart, and they know what they are doing, and we underestimate them with all of our knowledge and mm-hmm. our elitist selves. I know because I'm a part of that cohort and I am guilty of that. And it's we that we need to really figure out how to listen to those majority voices and not silence them with our educated selves, trying to teach them what is the right way of saying things or how to speak or how to do things or how to think. And of course, I mean, I don't think that many of them have read enlightened work or have gone to school or listened to conspiracists like Alex Jones, your favorite person, or or well traveled or speak properly, whether it be in Spanish or in English. Vos, right, Gemma? And or do you know what I mean? Like, I'm throwing that because I throw shade at her because I like her. But, you know, the thing is, it's like, I have hitchhiked across this country, and I have, from when I was 18, over the way to Boston, and, you know, I met lots of people that I had worked so hard to improve my English, and people didn't know how to read or write or speak properly or had certain dialectal English ways of speaking. And what happens on the left, and again, I'm speaking to those of us who are on the educated class selves that do believe that we're almost better than others, is that we wedge this division between us to the point where we don't allow for further talk and conversation and bridges and unity, to the point where we have so much group thought, and anyone outside of that is to be canceled. And I know that a lot of people are afraid to speak today. People are frightened. And ultimately, this is a destruction and will ruin us on the left. This is what our failure will be. It's the failure of ostracizing people in order to achieve to be right. And that is the greatest mistake that we can make. It's not necessarily to win people over. It's the goal to be right. And if we try to be right all the time, we're always going to, if we're always doing it, then we're going to lose people. And I know you're just going to be, it's ineffective. It doesn't work. It's not going to work. And I know this again from my personal experience, having been a former Jehovah's Witness. If you're just trying to shut people up and not allowing them to express what they think, you're just going to lose people. Right now, Jehovah's Witnesses are at the lowest right now with the number of members they have. So to the left will lose its membership, I believe, or lose majority of what they're trying to achieve. And there will be more perpetuation of racism, sexism, mm-hmm. because it'll just make them want to do that. It's them wanting to be contrarian to what we're teaching them to be, I think.
I just got a comment on the Noam Chomsky thing.
You go ahead.
I think that you, within your argument, you know, we also have to question these so-called intellectuals because they've been wrong. You know, fucking Cornel West jumped behind Obama and then he corrected himself. If we cancel him because he was under Obama, then what the hell? Noam Chomsky jumped behind Bernie Sanders. And he was wrong.
And now Joe Biden.
What's that?
He's calling for a vote for Joe Biden.
So, you know, like, and yet I still find that they have useful ideas, you know, but we have to disagree and also eliminate this, like, veil of respectfulness. You know, like, because they are intellectuals and academics, like, they have something better to say than someone from the hood. No. Like, my mom, as it turns out, like, when I was in my deep liberal, condescending, you know, patronizing asshole ways, my mom was writing a lot of ways, and she didn't change her tune. You know, and guess what? My mom is not college educated. My brother, too. You know, and, like, I've owed them apologies because they've been right. Hema. Like, Hema and I have disagreed, and she stuck to her guns. It turns out she was right the whole time about identity politics, you know, like how corrosive it is, or at least her gut feeling. I don't agree with a lot of her arguments, but I think it's counterproductive ultimately. And so she was right in that end. So my point is that we have to agree. We have to be able to disagree and also disrespect the so-called experts because they lie to us and they get fall in line real quick behind the powers that be, like they are doing this better.
We need to accept that people are flawed. That's my thing. If you accept that people are flawed, then you allow for space for error because you're only working with the information that you have. And if I'm so happy that I am not a voice of reason in a lot of spaces, in the sense that people are not going to come to me for advice. People are not come to me for the rule of the law because I know that I would make mistakes. And if a lot of people are depending to see what my latest article, what my latest opinion piece is on something that happened, odds are in a couple years from now, it's going to be looked back and say, you were wrong. You know, in retrospect, everyone has 20/20 vision. At that moment, you don't. So respect the people that you respect. Read them. listen to them, but also take it with a grain of salt. Also understand that they may be wrong and allow for them to be able to say, you know what, I messed up. With the information that I had at that moment, this was the answer. Now looking back, I was way off. One thing that I did want to point out and something that you spoke to, Eduardo, is I had read an article many, many weeks ago about the effects of COVID and the population that it was destroying and how it was killing off all of these Holocaust survivors and how we were losing the story of their struggle of everything that happened. Nowhere is there mentioned of the Nazis. And after World War II, a lot of Nazis went into hiding and hid that story. And as a society, for us that we want to change the world, that we want to bring people together, we need to hear those stories. We need to speak to them. What drove you to the Nazi party? What was it captivating? Mm-hmm. What were you going on? What? Because that's the part that we as a society need to be able to bridge that gap to stop that classism, to stop that divide of me white versus you brown. No, there was something more than that. We're not born seeing color necessarily. It's something else. So in that part, I agree with you. I think that all voices deserve to be heard. Even those of someone that's a racist, sexist, you have a voice you deserve to hear. I will disagree with you, but I want to hear your story. I want to learn something from it. I want to see what can I do to be better. Like, I want to bridge that gap. So cancel culture does not allow for that. Let's be frank and let's call it what it is. Cancel culture does not allow for voices that differ from your own. So what are you getting to? What you're doing is you're just rubbing your nose. You're just saying, look how awesome or how amazing, how intellectual I am, and you're wrong, and let me prove you wrong, and let me eliminate you from this world. Let me eliminate your voice so that only my voice is heard. And we're worse for it. As a society, we are worse for it.
And just to add to that, I just feel like also, at least in our environment here in San Francisco, because Gemma, we do are kind of in some of the same circles, you get, and Gemma said this many years ago, and like, just to give her credit, that a lot of people regurgitate this stuff and they don't even understand what they're saying. But because it is part of the culture, you just are saying the words, throwing words sound intellectual and part of the group, and that's where it connects to what you're saying, Eduardo. Because, you know, in order to fit in, you know, you use the same like norms and behavior to not be outside the group. And so in that way, we end up with things that are misguided and counterproductive, like saying that, you know, Trump is worse than Obama when, like, they're both horrible, you know, people. Just in one smiles, the other spits on your face.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, I watch currently, I'm into these three trans women from Mexico, Guanajuato. And they it's not a regular YouTube channel. They just live stream their lives, and it's very interesting. But they do not use a lot of the political correctness of the queer community here in San Francisco. And they don't fight so hard for people to say things correctly and how they address them. They simply laugh it off, or they say something back wittedly. And I guess if any one of us had said something that is offensive to the left, the liberal left, I should say, we would be canceled out. We would be said we are not being respectful of something. There's something about the liberal left here, especially in San Francisco, especially in the USA, that makes people want to have them conform to a certain way of, and I do think it is breeded normally in academia. I do think there is something there, and again I love academia. I mean I continuously be a lifelong learner and have registered myself to City College recently, and continue want to be in those spaces because I don't just want to leave it back in my early 20s or something. I want to be in that college atmosphere forever. But there is something, the way that professors, students, and it all lives within the grounds of academia that uphold high moral grounds of, it's like a certain self-righteousness that I know more than you do, and this is what it does, no? And so it's hard for anyone to listen to what people have to say, and then there's what we do, as why we have done this episode, which is there's censorship, there's denunciation, there's shaming, and like I already said, or maybe I'm being redundant here, but it just doesn't work. It's not going to win anyone over, and and the way I think I wanted, or what I would like for us to segue is, what can we do instead of cancel culture? What is the best way to deal with bigotry, with racism, with things that are hurtful to other people? That we shouldn't just say that cancel culture is not the way to go. We should also say, what can we do as activists? As even the word activist, I have a hard time with that, because it aligns you with a certain group of liberal activists, right? But I think that we should resist. I think we should I think we should debate and educate. And if we look at the letter, I'm going to quote it. It says, the restriction of debate, whether by a repressive government or an intolerant society, invariably hurts those who lack power and makes everyone less capable of democratic participation. The way to defeat bad ideas is by exposure, argument, and persuasion, not by trying to silence or wish them away. Ultimately, people will go on the dark corners of the web, and these things will continue being bred there, I think. And I don't think that that's the way to go. I just personally don't think that we need to push them further, hidden where they are, breeding more hate elsewhere. We should actually debate them. We should educate them. We should confront them.
Lipson, you need to talk. You haven't spoken, but before you do, I have a problem with that word educate. Let's discuss. I'm not going to educate you. You're not going to educate me.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's it together.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm looking for the words. Yes, I understand why you say that. Yes, I understand.
Educate me on my language, even though, let's be honest, more Spaniard than you do. La madre patria donde viene la lengua es española.
Not Nicaragua, for sure. go on.
Our poor English-speaking audience, we won't understand that joke. I feel bad for them.
Go ahead. I'm kidding. Okay, we'll go back to seriousness.
I believe you, Eduardo, when you read those words, because I believe you believe it. I do not believe the people who wrote those words, that they believe it. I'm just going to say that. But I do believe you, because I worked with you, I've seen you, and I've seen how their toxic environment that they helped create have made you afraid to raise questions on the show. That's how I look at it. But if, and we all disagree with the idea of cancel culture, shaming, and things like this, and Hema, to put you on the spot, if there's anybody who probably deserved to be canceled, it was Hema. Like, there was a time when Hema would say some crazy stuff. And she did exactly for the reason she said, which is, like, she was provoking. She was trying to provoke. And it did. It works. And honestly, but what the change that Hema, that I believe that happened for you, wasn't talking to me. It wasn't talking to Kenny. It was Nicaragua. It was the uprising in Nicaragua. That is what changed you. You saw and you participated in a life and death battle between the state and the people. And that... the reason cancel culture is so toxic is it tries to argue with fellow workers and exclude. We need to argue with fellow workers and include and bring them into that struggle. That's the whole point of it. The whole point is so you are no longer on their side, which is the racist side. You are on our side. If you insist on staying on the racist side, despite the fact that we've given, then when the lines are drawn as they were drawn in Nicaragua, then you are not our friend, whether you're a worker or not. You are against the cause. And that people have to understand that racism will only be fought in our hearts on a collective way through collective struggle. That's why I don't care what we, well, I do care, but even if we struck to even if we strike in August, over just health reasons, which ultimately you're going to, not over distance learning, not over that, teachers need to strike because it's only through that collective action we can actually learn what we're really about and what our values really are. I agree that we can challenge each other and say things, but we won't really know what we're about until we get involved in that struggle in the way that it was engaged in Nicaragua. And that's how people on a large scale will be changed. And that's how I think it has to happen. And George Floyd is actually an example of how that struggle, which did start to change people in the form of burning down, police stations and looting targets and taking redistributing wealth back, that is now being directed back into the Democratic Party. That's what the defund police things, and they're taking it out of that claim of just the worker claim, and they're putting it back into the elite claim. And that means that we can be assured that racism is going to expand as a result of this thing, that sexism and authoritarianism, autocracy is going to expand as a result of it, because Francis Fukuyama believes that the authoritarian government will be much more successful if people trust it. That's what he's saying. So we need an authoritarian government people can trust. And that's what we're going to get in November. And that's where these things are being directed. And so I guess I'll say that.
I just want to say that people like Donald Trump, he's a master. He's not an idiot. He's a master of playing the left because we become so sensitive to semantics. So he'll say something horrible to distract us and enrage us. Well, we forget that we got to focus on the whole system as a whole. And like, he's just the growth in the cancer of this system. So we have to learn to listen to these things, to shit that sounds so wrong, and try to understand it instead of trying to educate them, to understand where they're coming from and have our arguments. And I agree, at the end of the day, there will be lines drawn. But so long as your approach is to go educate, you don't gain anything. You're gaining enemies immediately. You have the chance of having an ally, in the struggle is zero. They're going to build walls, and especially when you're talking to people that are struggling about, there's whatever privilege that they didn't choose, they were born with. They are going to fall back into comfortable. I would be an idiot to give up my power. Or whatever sense of power that I think I have. So, again, we have to get used to listening to this shit that sounds so horrible, like Hema does sometimes, to provoke argument. But we have to be able to live within that environment. Otherwise, if we throw tantrums every time, we fall, again, we get played like a fiddle, by people like Trump.
And just to turn it back on the cancel thing, this is why you shouldn't cancel people. Because if I had grown up with YouTube, TikTok, Snapchat during my high school years, I would be one of those people right now getting canceled.
Yeah.
And yet, when push came to shove, I was one of the people that showed up. You never know who's going to show up. And those people that say and that you count and believe that they will be there might not. They might just be on the bandwagon saying the right things, but they're not really in it. And again, this is why, while cancel culture serves a certain purpose, ultimately, it means nothing. It does nothing other than separate and harm. So, yeah.
That works for me. Mic drop.
Dale, Eduardo, vos, ¿qué más quieres agregar a esta conversación?
I do have to say,
does not exist.
No, I always disagree with Eduardo's elitist, Spanish, yes. Trying to educate us all the time. Because him and I speak the same way, but this doesn't have to be on the show, but whatever.
I'm keeping it all.
And yet we're still friends. We disagree on that fundamentally, but we're friends.
I do believe that theory. I'm a prescriptivist, so I do like dictionaries, words. I believe in word museums. I do like old Spanish words. I do like old English words, old Native American words. And I hate this Spanglish and this whole this culture.
You're canceled.
We're canceling you, Eduardo.
Please listen for the thumbnail. Take a picture of us and then put a big red X over Eduardo. Thank you.
I just cannot. It's just when I hear, and so I make sure my nephew speaks correctly, but he then hangs out with other Latinos, normally Central Americans, and they don't speak very proper Spanish. So it's just like,
Le damos sazón a la vida, okay? Por favor.
I'm doing it to pick on Gemma.
Estúpida, es tu problema.
I'm kidding. I have a love. I just want to be clear. I have a huge love for Central America. That's why I went all the way to Nicaragua, all over Guatemala 3 times. And I've been to Honduras, where normally people wouldn't go. I've been to, so.
Dale, pues, stop trying to prove us. It's fine. We believe you. You don't have to.
I just want to be clear. All of it is just said. No, but I do love dictionaries and I do love words and I love literature. So I obviously have I favor the way that old ways of speaking are. That's all.
I'll defend you if you get canceled because of this.
I just want to be clear, it's not accents that I favor. It's vocabulary and proper way of speaking in Spanish, grammatically.
If I was Eduardo's press consultant, I'd be telling him, cut.
You're late.
I maybe the last thing I will say is just the last thing about this is that I wanted to, and I'm just speaking to you, all three of you, casually. Something Kenny kept saying is his mother. I don't think your mother, from what I am understanding, is necessarily on the right, like a conservative. So that's what I was trying to say. It's not just liberals against conservatives. It's also within, you know, it's people who have ideas that are sort of sound conservative, but you know, we kind of put them in two categories, you know, people, but people do have both conservative and liberal ideas, right? Yeah. I like my mother, she my own mother, right? She does believe that she doesn't believe that there should be discrimination, but at the same time she does. Well, she's not for aborting, or she's not for, but she also, it's so strange. It's a weird sort of, so that's why I'm just saying that I think it's mostly the educated class that do sort of fall into this arrogancy that, and they cancel people out, whether you're on the right or the left. So I just wanted to mention that, that it's not just people that they cancel out, conservatives. Yeah. You said to them, educated. You want to say the word educated? One of you had said the other.
I would just say I'm really glad we had Hema on this episode. And I might be making a case for future episodes being the four of us when it's a discussion.
Yeah.
Meaning.
Okay, well, how much are you guys going to pay me?
As much as Eduardo gets paid.
Is it?
You get the same wages as him.
Wait, he's brown. I'm white. No.
Okay, more. Yeah.
I don't go for that. That's not what I'm for. I'm for the proper way of speaking, not the color of our skin.
Oh my God. You get paid per dictionary word that you use.
Let me bust it out.
Everybody who comes onto this show wants to get paid? Everybody seems they want to get paid, Gemma.
Because
Benny's asking for a new computer.
Well, everybody, you're good at something, you learn to capitalize it. That's how people get wealthy. Yeah. Okay? Yes. Thank you.
Emma, you need to embrace your exploitation a little bit more.
Okay, I can bring it on next time. Yeah.
I am a little disappointed Hema didn't say anything really outrageous today.
I've gotten it out of my system. I've been having these conversations with folks, and I've been out, like, you guys think? No, I've definitely been outraged. But again, it's to push the conversation, because they're, and I'm like, okay, let's move on. Let me throw something.
I saw that life of yours. I don't know anything outside of that. So when people say
I was, back in high school, I was all about Somoza. I was saying that I was going to run for president. Oh, yeah, no, it was easy.
You were about Somoza? What do you mean?
Yeah, it was a Somoza.
Yeah. Yeah.
But remember, listen,
yes. And I remember we'd be in the car and you would say some things that would be very racist, with very racist words.
Oh, yeah.
And you were joking, but damn.
Yeah. It's a shock value. I obviously don't really believe it, but it's shock value, and it does. And, you know, you're young. You like to, you know, you like to get attention. You bust shit down. I own it. Cancel me. Fuck you.
But I think it's true, Gemma, what you said. Had you grown up, or had any of us, our generation, grown up with TikTok or Facebook or Snapchat or anything, you know, it's a marker forever. It's on the internet forever. So.
And that's kind of why I wanted to mention people like Jenna Marbles. And, you know, I don't want to go too much. This is not going to make it, obviously. But it's the fact that when you're young, and you have this new thing, which is YouTube. Nobody knows. It's innovative. Nobody knows. You just have a voice. And you want that shock value. You want to put that out there. You're going to say things that are going to fuck up. And for people to go back and dig it 20 years later and use it against you, when you are a completely different person and everything that you've done up until that part is of no merit, no value anymore.
No.
I can't fathom what kind of society we're going to be, because this is new. This whole generational thing, it's new, it's a trial, and we're going to see the consequences of it 10 years down the line, which probably is going to be a fascist fucking, it can get dark. Like, I've had these conversations with other people, and
it's just the amount of policing that goes on. It's like, it's just toxic, and like, you gotta walk on eggshells. And like, I don't know if this is going to make it, but I felt powerless, you know, in challenging those ideas before within that group. You know, I was like, I couldn't, because I was a man. I was an angry man, you know, and is this a way to, again, we said it, cancel dissent and cancel disagreement. And, you know, when people weaponize these things, and yeah, and they, you know, him, I use that for power. I think Trump does it for power. I think a lot of the people in our community, like people use obscure language, just like Latin, you know, like Catholic priests, you know, they used to give mass in Latin, and they gave them power using acronyms that I don't fucking know. And then when you ask questions, it's like, I don't have to educate you.
Yes, that. Yeah.
You know, or like, and then they talk about labor. And then now when we're organizing around the Black Lives Matter movement. And it's connecting to what we were joking around, but it's like, oh, how much money are we going to pay for their labor? For someone who's like in the struggle, you know, how much money is fair compensation for the labor? You know, and I'm like, dude, like, are we trying to change society? This shit ain't fucking, you know, a job.
The reason why I struggle, first of all, on this podcast, last channel, because I do think about what I'm going to say. So I have to look very closely at the words that I'm going to use. And I have told this to Andy before. I get very nervous about what is going to stick there for a long time. So I have to think things through in my head. And I'm slow just in general, just because I'm slow. And then I'm slower when I have to think things through, because I'm afraid what is going to be used against me.
That's why we need him on the show, because the thing you're about to say... She's going to say it.
Yeah. I don't have a filter. I don't care. I speak it out and I own it. And then if I say, yeah, I fucked up, move on.
I think part of it is because Hema is willing to live outside those groups, that group mentality.
Yeah, I don't care.
Because she is, you know, and she can come in and out and she's okay with that. But the rest is like, ugh.
up for my own club, and you ain't gonna be invited. And we'll have drinks all the time and get facials.
Facials and drinks while we get the revolutionary train moving. And then she'll get on. She says,
of course. We'll bring fabulousness to your train.
We still have to do the outro.
Oh, sorry. Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. That does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast that's challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes wherever you found this episode or on our blog at what-s-left.webno.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast/channel there and connect with us. I remind folks that if you like anything that you have heard here, please share your favorite episodes, rate, review, and subscribe to any of our 5-6 platforms on iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, Spotify, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host Andy Lipson and Kenny Cepeda, and our guest, Kema Sotomayor. See you next time.
Yeah, and you know, Kema used that for power. I think Trump does it for power. I think a lot of the people in our community, like